Blockbus.net Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Intern.cast show, the show where we, the hosts, much like the features we review, have not yet graduated up to theatrical release. All the other critics out there are as real as bipolarism. We're more like anorexia. We're not a real disease.
What? No. No. TJ, what the fuck?
Yeah, hey. We need to have a little talk about this, man. Come on.
A little talk? How about you stop talking and put some food in your mouth? It's not that hard, you skinny bitch.
No. No, it's... Okay, over the... If someone goes through, like, the past, like, 12 or... Are we on episode 12 or 13 at this point?
I think this is 13. Okay, that's how long it took me to be fed up.
So would you say then this episode is 13 Reasons Why?
No, we're not getting there. But, like, if you go back through the past 13 episodes, TJ just gets worse. Like, it starts and it's like, okay, like, that's normal. And then, like, halfway through, it's like, let's go on a 5-minute rant about makeup. And now it's like, anorexia isn't real. It's 2017, man.
You're just withering away, TJ. Every week, you're just getting a little bit worse and worse and worse.
He's suffering from emotional anorexia.
Well,
I apologize to all our anorexic listeners if you're out
there.
I'm sorry. It's a real thing. Yeah.
Can anorexic people like put earphones and listen to us? It seems like they're just too scrawny. I don't know where I'm going with that.
They have ear canals. Like, they put the little earbud in.
What do you think anorexia does? Did you watch a very different movie?
Anorexia, that's where, like, you know, you're addicted to YouTube videos.
Elephantitis?
Yeah, it's when you have elephantitis.
Oh, that's what the Elephant Man was about. Oh,
I yeah. Spoiler alert.
I am not a YouTube addict.
We are the intern.cast. My name is TJ. I'm your host. I'm joined today by
Leslie
and
Davey.
And our guest turned as awesome as he can be, his sophomore slump, hopefully not.
Justin Zarian.
Justin Zarian, how you doing, man?
I am doing great. Just been recording for other podcasts, had a really busy day yesterday, having a busy evening tonight because Game of Thrones.
Wait, you have other podcasts?
I'm not a one-podcast person. Come on, man.
I thought what we had was special.
It was, you know, that time we spent together, it was. But then I leave,
It was nice, and it was pure, and it was honest. And now you break my...
He doesn't even look at you during, okay? That's how not special it is.
I thought it was just a lazy eye.
That is a very good point.
Hey, if you're going to pull my hair, at least spank my ass.
Oh my God.
Get that on a fucking embroidery pillow.
Well, what have you been seeing? What have you been watching, man? Justin?
Oh, let's see. Well, obviously we watched the two things we're talking about today. And yes. Then I went to go see The Big Sick and War of the Planet of the Apes yesterday.
I saw both of those, too. They're so good.
Both of those have such raving reviews. Do they live up to the hype or what?
Well, I know we have a bit of a cease and desist on talking about big-scale movies, but yeah, I liked both of them. I mean, I like Planet of the Apes better in just terms of enjoyment, but Big Sick was solid. Like, all the way through, it was a solid movie, so.
The Big Sick was beautiful and perfect.
Yeah.
That is not an Apatow feature, right?
No, it's Michael Showalter. That's his name.
And what else has he done?
What, Hot American Summer?
Yes, he did. That is correct.
Never saw that. Is that good? I know that's like a faux pas not to say that. But
yeah,
I never
he's
did.
Kind it's of a okay. mainstay with like comedy projects with these kind of actors, I think. Is he Davey? Or?
Yeah, he's around. He's not as intense of it as like someone like Apatow is, but he's been doing this, and he kind of started going into more dramatic fare with Hello, My Name is Doris from last year, which a lot of people like.
Oh, that
and
one.
And now now The Big Sick, which I cried in a lot.
Yeah.
You know, you said that he's been around. You know who is not round?
What?
Lily Collins in the movie we're
oh,
going to
come
read
on.
We're not getting there yet. We're not getting there
okay.
yet.
Okay. I've decided that I need to give you guys like a 3-strike out with me, so that way I just limit how much annoying shit.
Yeah, TJ, I think I can see the outline of that joke in your stomach, so.
Oh, see, that was so much worse. How come you laugh at his Dave?
Because I'm clever.
That was clever.
Yeah.
That was fucked up, but that was clever, and I respect that. So wait, is it three strikes an episode or three strikes total?
Three strikes this episode and this episode only.
Okay, I'll start keeping a tally.
I guess if I could talk about things that aren't big releases I watched. I started my new job this week, and part of it we've been doing case studies about teensploitation films from like the 70s and 80s. Right. So we watched, what was it? Animal House and Fast Times at Richmond High, which I had never seen either of those movies.
Are exploitive?
Oh, what?
You said they were exploitive.
Well, it's the idea of teensploitation, the idea that it was using teenage culture to sell, you know, as a commodity kind of thing, so.
Interesting. I never thought of those as teensploitation.
Well, it's kind of the same thing like blaxploitation.
I like it.
You know, it's like, it's made for teens.
Sure. But see, I never even thought of blaxploitation as targeted mainly at African Americans. I just thought of it as more like a satire on that sort of cliche culture or I don't know.
You need some film history, my friend.
Yeah, because blaxploitation existed solely to cater to an audience that wasn't being serviced. And only recently did other cultures be like, these movies are good and we can enjoy them and have fun with them. But for a long time, they were exclusively targeted toward an African-American audience.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I never saw any of those movies that I thought was like, oh, this is like, they're all good. I just kind of thought it was more of like a satire to, I don't know. What am I trying to say? I always thought it was more of like a, hey, to the white people or the racists out there, we aren't as crazy as y'all think. We actually have good stories to tell. And that's why I always thought it was kind of like a satire in as much as it's kind of pointing a finger at the man, like, we're not as what you think we are. We actually have stuff to do.
Well, I mean, like it's pointing a finger, but it also is kind of a celebration in spite of that. Like, it goes back to, like, Oscar Michaud, like, the stuff that he did in, like, the 1920s and stuff, basically creating a new sector of film to cater to an audience. Can you guys tell that I'm in film school right now?
Hey, can you tell that I taught film school? I'm just saying, so. But yeah, no, and that's the thing, is that it was the thing where it did create this catering to a subculture, but it also influenced the stereotypes that would kind of harm the culture, too. Like, you know, Superfly and Shaft and those kind of things, where it's like, yeah, we got these heroic black figures with all these pimps and hoes and stereotypes, you know, kind of thing.
Don't forget Undercover Brother.
Well, see, that one's actually a satire, so.
You know. And Pootie Tang.
Oh, my gosh.
I love those movies. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, but anyways, what is it? Animal House and Fast Times, both really good movies. They're both fun, solid.
You haven't seen those before? That's crazy.
A what?
You haven't seen those before?
That's the thing, is that I didn't grow up in a household where we watched R-rated movies, so my education for that kind of sector has been very, stunted.
That's so funny. Like, my dad is, like, conservative as he is, made me watch those movies. I have, like, a better sense of comedy because I watched actually good movies growing up instead of, like, I don't know. Yeah, what's a bad movie? Toy Story.
How is Toy Story a bad movie?
David, tag team me. We're gonna go at him.
It's one of the best films ever made. It brought in a whole new genre of animation and a whole new style of storytelling.
Oh, I can hear your virginity yelling at me.
I can hear your IQ
dropping,
too.
That's one incorrect
too,
thing. That's strike one.
Strike one? That wasn't even aimed at the movies we were talking
but
about.
But it was factually
okay,
incorrect.
Real quick. I actually am curious. Okay. Y'all know how famous the nude scene in Fast Times at Richmond
High
is, right?
Which one?
Yes.
The brunette.
Phoebe Cates.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
Phoebe Cates,
that
right. That scene is, like, so famous. But I got between us and Leslie, I guess she wouldn't know. But I guess between us men, I actually found Jennifer Jason Leigh's character is way hotter. I don't know why she's like totally undercut in that movie. She's just as
well.
Pretty.
I think it's
the
idea that
I've also never seen Fast Times at Ridgemont High. So,
oh, you never seen it? Oh, okay, yeah.
I've never seen Animal House either.
Well, I mean, Animal House is a lot more anarchic in comparison, where Fast Times is a bit more like attempting to make a message about this stuff. But
right,
yeah. I guess the thing is, Jennifer Jason Leigh is very pretty, and we do see pretty much everything except the fronts on her, the bottom fronts. But I think Phoebe Cates, the reason that scene is so iconic is because it's so sexualized. Like, most of Jennifer Jason Leigh's scenes are not meant to be glamorous or, like, you know, showcasing her as this hot object, where that scene specifically with Phoebe Cates is meant to say, look at these breasts, you know, could have stopped me then.
Also, another thing with that is that, like, Jennifer Jason Leigh is famous for a lot of R-rated movies. The only other movie that Phoebe Cates is really famous for is a PG-rated film.
Oh, yeah, Gremlins.
In Gremlins. Gremlins. So, I feel like that also has something to do
with it. Well, and she is married to Kevin Kline, okay. So... You know,
good for both of them.
Dude, I miss Kevin Kline. He doesn't do a lot of good stuff anymore. Okay, Leslie, as a straight male, which one of these...
Wait, I'm a straight male?
As a straight female...
TJ, where are you right now?
Which one of... I know. Which one of these two girls would you crush on? The blonde or the brunette?
The brunette.
What? Man. Fine. Well, anyway, I just think it's kind of funny that Jennifer Jason Leigh's character is always, like, second tier in that, when people talk about Fast Times, but I think she's equally pretty.
Yeah, no, Jennifer Jason Leigh is the linchpin of that film, but all the other memorable roles, because they're so heightened and goofy, like Sean Penn and those guys, they get all the scene-stealing scenes, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I gotta ask you one more thing. I'm sorry we're getting into a Fast Times thing, but I was just thinking about this the other day. Justin, you just saw this, right? For the first time. Is Mr. Hand... And Spicoli friends? Does Mr. Hand like Spicoli?
Well, okay, so based on what I can understand, and also this is from my professor going through a long lecture about the intricacies about the plot and that stuff, as they are. But it is the idea that Mr. Hand, ideally, as much of a hard nose as he is, he does care about his students actually achieving, no matter even if it's baby steps. And that's the thing at the end where, you know, he made the threat in the beginning, like, you wouldn't want me to go to your house and teach history, do you? Which he does to Spicoli. And just the idea that he is dedicated to his word to the point where he's like, look, I may hate you in class, but I want you to not fail. I really, really want you to not fail, and you have to work with me just a little bit, please. So it's kind of a friendly teacher-student relationship kind of thing. You know, they're not buddies, but they at least understand each other. I that's how I read it, at least.
I agree. I really that's probably like one of my favorite scenes in it is when they're like when they finally shake hands.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, it's a really touching moment actually.
Yeah. What about you, Davey? What have you been seeing doing lately?
The big stuff, War for Planet of the Apes, Big Sick, Spider-Man. But I started doing this thing where when a movie comes out from a director that I'm not super familiar with, I'll catch up on a lot of their stuff. So, because of John Watts directing Spider-Man Homecoming, I watched his first film, Clown.
Wait, was Clown his first or Cop Car?
Clown was his first. He filmed it in 2012, and it got put on a shelf, basically, until around 2015. And he kind of doesn't acknowledge it, because I think it got fucked around with by the studio. Which, I mean, he should acknowledge it, because stuff happens in it, which makes it better than Cop Car. But... it's not a necessarily good movie, but it's an imaginative one, and it's a gory one. So if you're looking for, like, a C-grade horror movie, it's really not the worst that you can do. And also because I assume that Jeff Baena's The Little Hours is going to come to Nashville sometime, I watched the other film of his that I hadn't seen, because I'd already seen Life After Beth, and so I watched Joshi.
Oh, with, have you guys seen this movie? With Thomas Middleditch, right?
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Okay. I know I haven't seen it.
It's really good. It's really, really good. I hated Life After Beth. I don't know if any of you guys saw that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you? I mean, I like honestly, it was on, it's on the list, and I never got around to it.
I really did not.
Like I mean, that I liked. Movie. I liked that actress.
Yeah, the whole cast is great in that movie, but I could not stand that movie. But Joshi. Because I've been having conversations with people because 13 Reasons Why keeps coming back into my life. So I had a long conversation with my mom because she had started watching it. And I was basically trying to explain to her why it's terrible.
Aww.
And she didn't really get what I was saying. And so like a day after that conversation, I watched Joshi, which for those who don't know, basically Thomas Middleditch and Alison Brie are engaged. He comes home one day. He's like, love you, honey. I'm going to go to the gym for a bit. He goes to the gym, comes back, and she's hung herself.
Oh.
Jesus.
And it flashed forwards like 4 months, and...
I mean, I get it. Alison Brie makes me hung, but...
Not the time.
You're on thin ice, TJ.
That's half a strike. I'm negating the first strike just because it made me upset, but you're on half a strike now. but no, and so it flashed forwards like 4 months, and... they can't get the deposit back on Thomas Middleditch's bachelor party. So they're like, let's just go and have a nice time and try not to think about the fact that your wife is dead. And sure. It's this really touching exploration of grief and how the masculine way of dealing with these incredibly difficult emotions. I really enjoy the movie.
I'm glad you told us what that was about, because that's a good sell. Yeah. I'm really going to check that out now.
You should. I'm a big fan of the mumblecore movement, but it's one of those that I think works on a greater level than most of them do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'm going to check that out. Okay. I don't know why, but this popped into my head, and it's a very small critique from 13 Reasons Why that I never got to. And you just made me no. You tell your mom this, okay? Okay. You know, in the very first episode, how Hannah Baker tricks the one guy to get on the wrong bus?
Okay.
Because he's trying to impress her, so she tricks him to get on that bus. Mm-hmm. If roles were reversed, that would be one of the reasons why she killed herself.
Oh, shit.
But no, she's a selfish bitch. Like, if it was roles were reversed and someone had tricked her to get on the wrong bus, she would have ended up on the wrong side of town, she would have gotten fucking stabbed and robbed, and then she'd cry about it. But no, it's totally okay for her to trick someone to get on the wrong bus and probably go to the wrong side of town and probably get beaten by his parents because of it.
You're right.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
But she's a selfish bitch, and we don't think about that because she's sad. Someone called her a whore.
I mean, it's still not cool to call people a whore, but you're right. That is really fucked up, actually.
Yeah.
It is fucked up.
In like a year, we're still going to be saying, end this thing about 13 Reasons Why.
It has become 1300 Reasons Why. Leslie, what have you been up to?
So I've been rewatching a lot of old stuff, so...
Awesome. My favorite pastime.
Not really. But anyway, I started rewatching Being Human.
Ooh. Oh, it's only the original or the American?
I started watching the American version, and I was like, well, I never watched the UK version, so I started watching it, and like two episodes in, I was like, F this shit, I'm going back to the US mode.
It's
so much better.
I mean, I haven't seen the British version.
Strike one, right, guys? Strike one for Leslie.
Oh, shut up.
Okay, I haven't seen the British version, but I watched like the first season and a half of the US version, and I kind of liked it. It was pretty fun.
I love it, and what's it called? Like, just the editing and the actors and everything like that is just so much better. And normally, I love UK stuff, like Skins. Totally love that.
Yeah, but the American US version of Skins was way better.
No,
that's not even a little bit true.
Strike three, get out.
You can't give strikes.
She can give strikes.
No. I refute your strike.
Shut your whore mouth.
Davey, she called me a whore. Get on her. It's not nice. You just said it's not nice to call people a whore.
Leslie, don't do. Leslie, don't do that. Don't give him more ammunition.
TJ, you ignorant slut.
Oh.
That's an Office reference.
It's no, that's an SNL reference. Dang it.
Oh,
it's also an Office reference.
Okay, fine. Yes, it's an Office reference.
Okay,
you young people.
Okay, that's pretty much all I've been seeing.
Yeah, I like that show. You showed it to me, and it's cute. I've never felt the need to like sit down. Yeah, it is cute.
It's cute. Pretty cute.
Because I don't know. I guess I'm just so tired of the whole like vampire werewolf thing. It kind of came late, like to me.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's the better one of any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like it's like Vampire Diaries is fucking awful.
Yes.
Yep.
And it's definitely not that. It's actually good and smart and actually has writing. Yeah.
Being Human, it's kind of like a slightly more dramatic, like, toned-down version of something like True Blood. Like, it's silly, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is, True Blood... Never mind. I'm being a pervert again. There was, like... True Blood had a lot of nudity. I wish this one had more nudity.
I mean, that's fair. They are attractive people. But that was kind of True Blood's selling point. It was, like, boobs and vampires. Which worked.
See, I never thought of that as the selling point. I just thought of it as, Rogue's boobs. And that was kind of, like, the main part of it.
But that's the same point. That's the same point why Phoebe Cates gets it in Fast Times in Ridgemont High. Because it's something, quote-unquote, taboo. And that's why it works.
Fair enough. Speaking of taboo, a.k.a. things we're not supposed to talk about, I saw Spider-Man Homecoming. And Spider-Man is my... He's my shit, man. I love Spider-Man.
I love Spider-Man too.
Shit.
What?
He's your shit.
Oh. I thought someone said they love Spider-Man 2, but what they really said is they love Spider-Man also.
I mean, Spider-Man 2 is also a great
film. Yeah, I love Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2 is still my favorite Spider-Man. Yeah. This was like almost a 10. It was really? Like almost a 10. It was just missing one little thing. You know what it was missing, you guys?
A good screenwriter?
When I was...
A train fight?
No, well, sort of.
A compelling villain?
Kind of, because... well, see, that's kind of it. Is when I was a kid and I was playing Spider-Man, the video game,
right?
And you had to, like, swing around the city and you actually had to, like, point your webs in the general direction of what building you wanted it to stick to, and you would swing in that direction. You didn't just blindly go wherever you direct.
Yeah.
You
know what
I mean? Yeah.
The one of the best fights in that game, one of the best bosses, was the Vulture, because you're fucking high up next to the Empire State Building. You're swinging around and you can't fucking catch the dude because he's flying. This is a villain that can fucking fly. And most of their battles are, like, either on the ground or at night.
Yep.
How lame is that?
It's pretty lame.
It was alright.
Like, they should be both up in the air fucking, like doing acrobatic shit. But,
yes, I agree. Anyway,
that is the, like, if it had that, if it had one scene like that, it'd be a perfect 10. But, yeah, needless to say.
No. Yay. But okay.
I sense we would drastically disagree, Davey. So, yeah, you stop right now.
Yes. I'm glad you're happy, TJ. I'm honestly, like, I'm glad when movies make people happy, especially if they don't make me happy. But this is just another Kong Skull Island. It's just another movie that everyone loves, and I'm like, eh. Although Kong Skull Island's a piece of shit.
Davey, why do you hate good movies? I'm just saying.
I don't hate good movies. I hate movies without substance, structure, or a reason to exist.
Sometimes that's okay.
He hates good movies, and yet he loves Passengers.
Ooh.
What? Where did you get that from?
That was on your best of list.
No. Passengers?
Yeah, Passengers.
The fucking Jennifer Lawrence, Chris Pratt thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
That was on your best of list. I saw it.
No, it wasn't.
Don't lie to me.
You know what? I will say this. Passengers is not nearly as bad as people say it is. It's not...
I totally agree. It's not fucking bad. Harmless. It's whatever. Perfect.
It's not as bad.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a great film trapped inside of a mediocre film.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's depressing. We are getting super off topic.
Speaking of topic, we are doing a double feature today. We are going to Castlevania and To the Bone. That's right, two Netflix originals. And we said we were going to start with Castlevania?
Yep.
Right? Although right. Castlevania to the Bone sounds like a great subtitle for a Castlevania game.
You know what? These two movies need to be meshed together, and like that would be awesome.
Anorexic vampires.
Yeah, she needs to truly suck blood to be able to survive.
Yeah, no, like, they suck the blood and then they spit it out. They're like, I can't do the calories. This guy eats too much. That was bad. I said it, and I'm sorry.
It was funny.
Thank you.
That was it.
Thank you.
You stole that from me.
Yes!
Yeah, I have...
Wait, no, that's bad. That's bad, actually.
Castlevania is sort of I never read any of the... I don't know shit about Castlevania. I never played the game.
Oh, they're great.
But it's loosely based on the... game,
yeah,
like the old DOS game, right? Or is it?
Oh, well, I think it's based on Castlevania 3, roughly. Like, it's got similar premise design as that one. Correct me if I'm wrong, Davey.
I am googling it.
Okay, well, right. I'm gonna say I'm right.
It's based off Castlevania 3, Dracula's Curse.
There we go. Right. Thank you.
Wow. Okay. Fair enough. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Well, needless to say, if you don't know anything about the game, it is a sort of vampire movie. It starts out very brutally, I might add, with a execution.
Yeah, pretty much.
A burning at the stake of a so-called witch.
Right.
And then she happens to be married to, they keep calling him the devil, but really he's
Dracula.
And then it's sort of the repercussions that this faraway land has to deal with for
a year.
Yeah.
A year later. So it's, I don't know, it's kind of hard to talk about just because it's kind of like, what's the
kind of short.
I want to say silly.
It's very short.
Yeah,
it's four episodes.
It's very short. Like, it's supposed to be a series.
Yeah.
But it's like way short. And
episodes are only like 25 minutes.
This is not a series. This is a TV movie broken into four parts to make an excuse to become a TV series.
It really should be, yeah, exactly. It really should just be one long thing, and not even long, because if you put the two together, it still would be barely 2 hours.
Yeah. But here's the thing. I, like, it was very clearly an animated movie. It's an animated show. It's very clearly an animated movie that they broke up into four pieces. And now that they're going to make more of it, I'm super excited for it because I like how short this was.
You're right. I do enjoy the running time. It seems to fit it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, again, it does. Can you give me a reason why this couldn't be one long thing?
There was no reason for it to be not one long thing unless the further seasons kind of go a little bit more in depth into things.
It feels to me, and this is probably my only gripe with it, just because I have so little to say about it, but it feels to me like it's just a video game. And I know it's based off of a video game, but that's the thing, is the video game already exists, so you can just play the video game. There's nothing about this that says to me, translate to the screen. Because the lead character, what's his fucking name? The lead character, Trevor, and he has a famous, the Belmonts, he's Trevor Belmont. Yeah. And it feels like he's the playable character because he keeps running into people. He doesn't really have a quest. It's sort of thrust upon him. And then they keep sending him on side missions.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's kind of like when you're playing an RPG game and then you run into a merchant that's like, oh, I can totally help you with that, but only if you fetch me 2 dozen eggs. And then he goes on some silly side quest to get 2 dozen eggs.
Because all the side missions kind of lead into the main plot, I think it feels more structurally cinematic. I don't think it necessarily feels... It's very clearly inspired by a video game, but this is the first time that we've seen a video game adapted to something, and it feels cinematic.
Yeah, I agree.
It feels like it's doing something right. Sorry.
What is it doing right?
It tells a story. There's a beginning, middle, and an end. There's characters. They have conversations. It's funny. It's gory as hell.
Very.
At points.
Very gory.
Very gory, especially for an animated thing.
Yeah.
And it's...
Almost to the detriment of the story, I feel. Like, it was just maybe a little too, like, reveling in the violence. And I'm like, I get it. This is dark and brooding. You don't need to show me eviscerating babies and stuff like that. It was a little much.
I thought that
the only thing I liked about it.
I think the heavy gore in the show kind of made it stand apart, and the brutality of it basically being like, this is the Middle Ages. Shit was real fucked up in the Middle Ages, and we're going to show that.
Well, like a lot of anime shows, they kind of focus on that. Like, yeah. Elf and Lied, for instance. Like, they focus on the gory stuff versus, you know, everything else. And I think I like that about this.
Yeah, it almost had a Tokyo Demon feel of it, to it all, if anyone's ever seen that one.
I have no idea what either of you are talking about.
but I agree. Like, I really did like the art of it. Like, you could pause this at almost any time, at any frame, and it would be an amazing fucking, like, portrait in some emo kid's house.
Well, like, the still pictures were the prettiest. I didn't like the animation itself. I thought that
kind of... It felt kind of
funky. Yeah, no, the worst part was...
Sort of like a video
The worst
game.
Part was the people's faces, I felt. Whereas, like, they only had, like, three different positions they would animate, and just anything else... I mean, it was fairly expressive in the body language, but yeah, anytime they had the talk, it was like, okay, it's still not there yet.
Focus more on the background in it, because...
The imagery of it.
The imagery was very, very nice.
Their voices, though, I wish they would have done something a little bit better with the female voices.
I was just going to say the same thing, but it's not just limited to the female voices to me. I felt like even the main character, he sounds surprised like this.
See,
he sounds sad like this.
He
sounds really worried like this. Like, there was no fluctuation in any of his tones.
I mean, I think it could have been intense the fluctuation in what he was going for, but I mean, it's Richard Madden from Game of Thrones voicing the main character, and I did think he did a good job.
Yeah, I liked him a lot in this. I thought he carried the right amount of gravitas for such a serious thing, because, you know, you guys say it's kind of funny. There's not a whole lot that's very funny about this show, but...
Really? Especially in the beginning, like, when we first meet this guy, and he's, like, in the bar talking to these guys, and he's like, you don't want to mess with me, just leave me alone, and they keep messing with him, and he just destroys them. I thought that was hilarious.
No, that was probably the funniest part, but that's what I'm saying. Like, it's not a generally funny story, so at least he carried the right amount of drama to balance out those moments of humor kind of thing.
I mean, it's not a comedy, but I think it's having fun with itself. I mean, Warren Ellis wrote this, so, like, it's enjoying being there.
Yeah, you know, and he fleshes out the world decently well enough. Like, you feel like... You know, the problem with a lot of video game movies is that it just feels like a carbon copy of, like, you know, treading through the numbers, you know, stock characters, that kind of stuff. But this one feels like there's actual politics, there's actual relationships, there's actual weight to the world around them. And no more clear is it that Warren Ellis hates organized religion than it is in this show, because... Man, he, you know, except for, like, the one priest at the end is just like, hey, is there a guy who can bless holy water? Every priest in this movie, TV show, is just the giant bag of dicks throughout this whole story.
Yeah. I mean, I think Preacher pretty much showed that he did not care for organized religion.
Yeah.
Didn't he do Preacher?
Was that Garth Ennis? Oh, no, you're right. You're right.
No, I think it was Garth Ennis. This is Warren Ellis. I got... confused.
Yeah, no, they're very similar.
Yeah, you're right, sorry.
Well, I mean, you're saying that the world building is kind of a problem, but I think the character building goes along right with that, just because you're telling me they feel the weight of the world around them, but I don't think that they do. You got these, I mean, the good guys are the scrolls or the elders or what
the speakers.
Yeah.
The speakers. And these people are fucking stupid, okay? Like, these people are beyond retarded. Sorry. But, like, the organized religion in this, they make the organized religion people, all the priests and stuff, to be the evil ones.
Yeah.
And yet they at least have, like, they're dumb in the way of their thinking, but at least they have a plan of action and reasons behind what they're doing.
It's
these
a bad
speakers
plan,
people.
But...
Yeah, totally.
The,
no,
the plan is let everyone else die.
Yeah, but it's a plan. It's
some kind of plan.
Okay. These speakers are just like, well, we know we're gonna die. Okay, so let's do something about that.
Yeah.
No. Well, no. That goes against our beliefs. What? Then go die. Like if what that tells me is that you want to die. If you want to die, then go die.
But,
I don't know
but
why
they
this
allow,
guy, the
they allow
Trevor
Belmont to get where he needs to go.
But he's, okay, that's fine, and he gets there. He basically gets what he, that's the thing is, what does he care? He wants to save them. Why?
Because they're,
why does he want to save them?
Not giant bags of dicks. He wants to save humanity.
He's a giant bag of dick.
Huh?
Just one. He is one giant bag of dick himself.
Yes,
yeah, but it shows that he's kind of world weary. Like, he's a guy who, clearly he wants to do good, but because, you know, his family got excommunicated, most of them have been exiled or killed, his goodness has been kind of weighed down by his drunkenness and his just general discontent and, you know, contempt for life itself.
Yeah.
So it's really about him finding his heart again. That's really the arc of this first little mini series.
And also, like,
finding his heart again.
Like, the priests hate the seekers, and Belmont hates the priests. Enemy of the enemy is my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if the enemy of my enemy is my friend, that may be true, but that doesn't make my enemy smart, or my friend smart.
No, but they're at least there, and they're worth saving. Because, is it Travis? Travis Belmont? Or
Trevor.
Trevor.
Yeah. Travis, he has this duty put on him by his family, and there's a line in the end that is basically something along the lines of the things we do because of our families. Travis is not a good guy. He is a bag of dicks. But he's trying to do right by his family and by his name. And him trying to save the Seekers is the same as him trying to save all the ordinary people in this town.
I see that. I just didn't feel it.
And I understand
I'm not saying
that.
You're wrong. I just didn't feel it.
No, and if that didn't come across, then that's on the fault of the show and its relation towards you.
No, it's your fault.
It's my fuck.
Yeah, Davey, I didn't know that you were Adi Shakar, actually. You were the one who actually produced this, right?
Yes.
It was all your fault.
I'm sorry. I wrote Castlevania. I'm sorry, guys.
Well, go to the high priest and be forgiven.
I will.
I don't think that guy would forgive you.
I don't think so.
No, he wouldn't. But I don't know. The only thing I really liked about it, again, was just the imagery. I that's just because I'm into shit like that.
I get that. It is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It was really beautiful, I thought.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Do we want to do ratings and final thoughts?
Sure. I guess I'll go first. I like the imagery. I just really feel like the story could have been more interesting. Like, here's the thing. It has a good, interesting setup, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, who doesn't like an evil plague and demons killing people and taking and Dracula making revenge? But again, the side mission feel of it just kind of made me feel like it strayed away from what it was ultimately saying, and it could have been more interesting if it was more character driven as opposed to, hey, I know you want us to save, or I know you want to save us. I'm talking about the speakers. The speakers want to be Trevor wants to save the speakers, and in return, what he does is he does a favor for them by going to rescue the chick. But again, he gets nothing out of any of that. He rescues her, cool. They still don't want to follow their end of the bargain. Okay, so what? And yet he's fighting so hard for them for no reason. And I get that they're enemies of the state also, but I don't know. The mere fact that I have to explain it and I get stuttered saying it because there's no real weight behind it is the problem to me. So I give it 6 out of 10 demons eating babies.
Yes.
That's higher than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Well, just because here's the thing. It's so short. It's so fucking short. Yeah. And, like, you can sit down and, like, I'm not a big advocate for drug use, but, like, this is one of those things where if someone said to me, oh, if you sat down and you were high off your ass, it'd be really interesting to watch. And I could see that, because it's really easy to follow, and it's really fucking pretty.
Yeah.
I'm not sure this is one you want to be stoned for, because you'll be seeing all those demons in your real right? life, just like...
That's my secret, Cap. I always see demons in my real life.
Dun, dun, dun! Leslie?
I liked it. I love the imagery, like how TJ said. I thought the graphics were just so freaking beautiful. Like, there was a scene where, you know, like, blood was just rushing down the drain, and, like, I felt that. It was just so awesome, and it was just really cool. I just wish there was more content to the dialogues versus just, hi, let's go here, let's do this. Like, it was just very quick and short, and it just reminded me of, like, a Disney anime, you know, where they're like, oh, hi, I'm this person. Okay, let's go. Bye.
Yeah.
But I think, like, my rating is going to be based off of this quote that I absolutely love from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know more about Dracula, I guess. I think that's the only reason why I would continue watching it if the second season came out or secret, whatever.
Yeah.
But he says, kill for the only true love I have ever known and for the endless lifetime of hate before me. And I think that's what, like, got me. If there was, like, just a show about this Dracula guy, like, I'd totally be into that.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10 eye-popping and intestine-flying chaos in the street.
That's, like, the nicest rating you've ever given.
I know. Then the only reason why I'm giving it that nice of a rating is because of that quote and the imagery.
Usually you're like, I loved it. 3 out of 10. I hated it. 1 out of 0.
1 out of 0?
Hey, I don't question her madness, man. I try and I get beat.
That's not her madness. 1 out of 0 is nothing she has ever said, because I would have made fun of her.
Justin?
Well, I mean, there's not a whole lot to add, except, yeah, I mean, its biggest the biggest complaint is that there are a few inconsistencies with the animation, and it is so short. Like, literally, right when things get going to the point, like, okay, now we're getting to the big climactic element of this arc, it kind of just ends.
Yeah.
It feels like there was, like, one episode left to, you know, to finish this part of the story, and then it's just like, nah, just come back whenever we make the next series, if we make the next series. Yeah. But, I mean, otherwise, I thought, you know, the strength of the writing is what kept this from being, you know, this is one of the better of the video game adaptations, I thought. It's still flawed, it's still imperfect, and also I had the problem where, as much as they want us to hate Dracula, by the end of that first episode, we're just like, nah, man, Dracula's got a good point. Kill everybody in this world.
You know? He was a fair guy. They murdered his wife, okay? And he said, I give you 1 year. A 1 year head start.
And they didn't do jack shit.
Yeah, that's so fucking weird. Like, he's a man of his fucking word.
Anyway. Yeah, no, instead we had to watch Pope Palpatine just like, yeah, Satan's full of crap, we don't have to worry about him. But, yeah, otherwise, I thought it was pretty good. I liked all the acting overall. I thought, you know, Richard Armitage was pretty good. And, yeah, aside from my complaints that it is ridiculously gory, just, like, you know, there's some stuff in there that is just like, okay, we get it, guys, you're hardcore. But, otherwise, I think... Yeah, yeah, no, it's fine. But otherwise, I'll give it, I actually enjoyed it enough, I'm going to give it 7.5 out of 10 scenes of people talking about sex with goats.
Amazing.
Dude, if I remembered that there was a scene about talking about sex with goats, I would have hired my rating.
Yeah, wasn't that the part in the bar, that's what they were talking about right before they fight Trevor?
Oh, I like it more now. I
recommend it. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10 times I wanted to have sex with a goat.
That was not the point. That was not the point of that scene. What the fuck?
Quiet, you. Davey?
AJ, you're something else. Davey,
Davey, please. I like the show. I liked how short it was. It is a very simple show. I think they can do better, but I did like this is kind of like a primer for hopefully what comes along later. It is so mercifully short, and I know if I had seen this when I was like 16, this would have been the coolest thing ever to me. Like,
I'll give that to you.
Like vampires and like the Middle Ages and there's blood everywhere and they say fuck a couple times. Like, it'd be the coolest thing in the world.
A couple times? There's like a whole like 3 minute scene where they're just like F and F. Just cram it all into one scene in the second episode.
You're right.
Yeah. But like that. I kind of thought they went overboard with that too. I mean, obviously I swear like a sailor, but I don't want my writers to swear like a sailor. That's just me. Like, I feel like they can come up with better words. It's kind of. I really hate when some people. Sorry to go off topic, but when some people use like or fuck in a sentence too often where they're like. He was like, oh my god, like, it was, like, really, like, windy, like, outside. Yeah. And then when people do the same thing but use the word fuck, it was fucking so fucking windy outside, fuck.
I totally agree.
Like, it's just, I swear like that, but I don't want my writers to swear like that. It's just too overbearing. It's distracting.
And that is a fair point. And is there an argument to be made that it's a little much, it's a little superfluous? Of course. But I kind of like that about it. It was like, we're basically going to be, like, a teenager's, like, dream. But yeah, also...
I can give it that. And I praise it for steering into that.
Yeah, because it was never going to be something that took itself super seriously. I really liked that it was having fun with itself. I really liked that despite it basically just being wish fulfillment, it had a story, it had a point, it had themes and characters, even if not all of that was super well-defined. I mean, I'm excited to see where this goes next because the animation's beautiful. A lot of the action scenes I found legitimately I found myself invested in them, especially the last action scene. I was really into it. And I don't know, I had a fun time watching it, and it's so short that it doesn't mean a lot, and I'm already starting to forget part of it, but I don't regret watching it. So yeah, I'm gonna agree with you, Justin. 7.5 out of 10 mental images from this podcast that I will never be able to get out of my head.
Fair enough. Speaking of things that are skinny, like this story, to the bone, y'all, to the motherfucking bone.
Segway man strikes again.
I'll be back next week. I'm here all week. Anyway, so we are reviewing our second feature for the night, which is To the Bone on Netflix, starring Lily Collins.
And Keanu Reeves.
Oh, yeah. Keanu Reeves. You know, I was thinking, when he plays a doctor, maybe he hasn't played a doctor as many times as I think he has, but the couple times I've seen him play a doctor, he's so milquetoast.
he's the same character in everyone. Because I think I actually kept thinking Something's Gotta Give when he was playing a doctor.
That's exactly what I was thinking of. That exact one. He's so like... Yeah, I'm a doctor. Are you? Because you're kind of, like, boring.
He's no, kind diagnosis? Of whoa.
So, To the Bone is about Ellen, later called Ellie.
Eli,
going through sort of, like, a rehab for anorexic people.
Specifically young people.
And she's, yeah, younger anorexic people. And it's sort of about her, quote-unquote, journey to healing. But it's, I don't know, again, I'm glad we're doing a double feature this time, because I feel like I don't have a lot to say about either one of them.
Yeah.
But this is so kind of like, Meh.
I disagree. I actually enjoy this quite a bit. I mean, it is, really? It's the best PSA that I've ever seen, and yes. It is a PSA for sure, but it's so, because for those who don't know, the person behind it is Marty Noxon, I think her name is.
Yes,
And that was the person behind Unreal and a bunch of TV shows that are on right now.
Yeah.
And it does have a TV vibe to it to some degree, but I thought that on a whole, for being one of her only, I think it's her, yeah, one of their only, productions for, like, film and, like, actual feature-length stuff.
Right.
It was pretty awesome.
Okay, before we get into it, I guess we should go a little bit more in-depth into the plot, so...
No.
No?
You're so easily, like, thrown off balance, dude.
I don't...
Davey,
go, keep going.
I was just so stunned by that. I was like, I couldn't form my next sentence. I didn't. So basically,
go ahead, please.
Okay, so this girl Ellen, she at the beginning of the film, she's leaving a traditional hospital, one of the like treatment wards, and she goes home back to her father and her stepmother and her half sister. And they're like, we're so glad that you're back. You might want to see this other guy. Basically kind of like, this will be the last person you have to see. Then you can just continue living here and it'll be okay. Because she's not getting better. She struggles with a severe form of anorexia. It has another word for it, another word to it. But it's
bulimia?
No, it's like anorexia nervosa, I think, is what she has.
Someone else was suffering through bulimia nervosa, I think.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay, but she's a super aggressive form of anorexia. She looks like someone put a sheet of parchment paper over a skeleton that you found in a science classroom. It's scary to watch.
Yeah, the point being, so she's like starting to grow hair unnaturally because of like Lugona or whatever it's called. Yeah, just ugh.
Yeah, it's really. It's
that part was interesting. I actually wanted to know more about that, like the science behind anorexia. I would have watched the shit out of this if it was more...
like a documentary?
Character-based. Yeah, more of a documentary on what anorexia is. That part was interesting,
because yeah, I never thought of it there, that way. You know, we already have those movies.
Yeah. And so...
Yeah, I guess.
Well, she goes to meet this specialist who's played by Keanu Reeves, and...
Whoa. And he still looks good.
He still looks great. He still looks the exact same that he did 30 years ago.
I think he just walked off the John Wick 2 set for this one. Just like, okay,
much.
Put my guns away, get my doctor outfit.
Yeah. He just changed the shirt and then that was it.
It turns out it's kind of like in Matrix when they upload into his brain and he wakes up and he's like, whoa, I can fix bulimia.
but basically...
Show me.
Fuck. So Keanu, it turns out that her going to see this specialist is a lot... It's another ploy to try and get her help. So she goes to this guy, and he invites her to live in this special care facility that's a little more hands-on than a traditional hospital. And it's her and, I think, five other people, four girls and one boy.
It's six, because they say that it's three to a room, but there's one boy.
Yeah, so there are six people total. So there are five others in this hospital, and a few counselors, and Keanu Reeves stops by from time to time when it's convenient for the plot. And
yeah, as much as that his contract allotted him the minimum for.
Yeah, I imagine it's like, you got me for 3 days. Use them wisely.
Yeah, and...
He's the first build, right? He's the first build.
No, it's Lily Collins, then Keanu Reeves. Or it should be.
But on IMDb, he's first build.
That's hilarious.
Oh, okay.
He's like, in and out of it for... A couple seconds at a time. But to be fair, if I was in out of Lily Collins, I would only last a couple seconds at a time as well.
And ladies and gentlemen, we have found our first strike for the day. But the movie is quote-unquote about this girl, Ellen Eli, like her journey into healing, her trying to have kind of a normal life and kind of move beyond this disease. It's got a little bit of Fault in Our Stars in there, which is kind of weird. It's got a little bit of all these other... teenage disease movies, and it tries to be...
I didn't know there was a subgenre of teenage disease movies.
They're coming out there. And they cannot...
I know they are, but I never thought of it in a way of actually putting it into its own subcategory. I just call it bullshit.
It can be... Like, I feel like 13 Reasons Why is also in that category. But 13 Reasons Why is kind of exploitative, basically, of the actual illness. Here, it's a little bit, but it's more trying to be like, this is a thing that she needs to deal with and needs to recover from. And the film wisely is about that recovery. And that's it. So, what do y'all think?
Well, I already said my thing. But,
yeah.
Leslie, what do you think?
It felt very, like, in the beginning, it felt like a Lifetime movie. And I thought I was really going to like it, just the way that it was played out, because I love Lifetime movies. And, you know, midway through, it kind of took a different turn than what I expected.
Yeah.
So, basically, like, you know, she's going through, like, her family drama issues with her dad not really being there and her mom, who is a lesbian, living out in Phoenix to kind of, like, I guess, avoid the subject.
Yeah.
And, like, I really like that concept, and I know that sounds kind of weird for it to play like that throughout her journey, but, like, I don't know. I wish it didn't turn into a cheesy teen angst love story.
Yeah.
I didn't like that.
I get that.
Yeah. In a lot of these movies that are kind of like this, I feel like that's the problem, where it's about something and you really want the character to get better, and yet the solution always ends up sort of being like love.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying love isn't fucking powerful, but love can't cure addiction. It can't fucking fix Ebola either. Like, it's,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it shouldn't turn into that kind of story.
Yeah, and I think it skirts that, and I think the movie does do a slightly good thing of having the one guy in this house,
Luke. The token white guy. The token ballet player.
Yeah,
I don't know why he's, like,
the token ballet
the only
player,
the guy,
obviously.
The only guy in the thing. Like,
yeah.
Why not just diversify it and have them half and half, but okay.
Because it is much less common for men to suffer from anorexia, but I'm glad that the movie was like, hey, this could happen to men too. It's just less common and less... kind of dramatized.
I'll give you that.
But he does kind of subscribe to that belief, like, you, like, love can fix me, yada yada yada, and she's like, what?
Who are you? What's your name again?
Yeah. Who are you? What's going on? I was in Mirror Mirror. I don't have time for this shit.
Yeah, well, at the same time, the movie also makes a big case about the fact that it kind of is about love solving the problems, because the biggest thing about this movie is that it really depends on her getting support from the people who care. Her family, this guy, all these people, because it's a thing that she's not willing to change. She's not willing to make the steps necessary to actually eat, to actually take care of herself. And it, you know, it's a burden for everyone else to have to, like, force themselves onto her to say, like, you need to fix this. But that's kind of the only way to reach her, is that, yeah, if you're going to make this change, you need to really care about the people who care for you. Which, I respect that. I thought I liked that one.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily romantic love. It's more love in a general sense, which is better, I think.
Yeah.
I don't entirely know. I'm very mixed on this movie.
You're right when you say it skirts it, but it seems like it skirts it for so long.
It does.
That it wants to trick you into thinking that's what it's about. Ultimately, that's not it, but it is just kind of like it. And then when you find out that's not what it is, it just feels like an unnecessary detour.
I feel like they had, like, such a powerful thing going in the beginning. And, like, they could have completely, I don't know, just made it more...
Totally.
Yeah,
you know what, you just gave me a good idea. Like, they hated each other in the beginning, or so they say, but don't show. I didn't feel that either, but they say that, right? So they could have had a serious friction chemistry, sort of like, I don't know, Silver Linings Playbook, where they are so anti each other, and yet they perfectly... symbiotic relationship each other.
Yeah.
I would have liked that a lot better, but this isn't it. They, like, quote unquote hate each other for about 5 seconds, quote unquote love each other for most of it, and then kind of drop that storyline altogether in the end. So it's a huge waste of time to me.
Yeah, the romance is the weakest part of this movie.
And the problem is that they don't make that guy terribly likable overall, because the first time you meet him, he's just he's kind of a dweeb throughout this movie.
He's a boob. A dweeb and a boob are, like, the perfect words for it. He's just, like, dude, shush. Like, stop.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. It's, like, he constantly is, like, quoting, you know, a whole bunch of authors. He's the one who's really being aggressive with her, with the relationship.
Yeah.
he's the one who screws up the relationship for the most part, because, you know, there's the one part, I don't want to spoil completely, but you're just like, dude, this is like, you know, classic mistake number one that everyone does, and you are failing hardcore. And thankfully, the movie never actually tries to fix it, because it's like, nope, I mean, if anything happens, it'll happen, but, you know, he kind of messed it up himself, and I didn't really feel bad for him, because up to that point, I'm just like, I'm starting to warm up to you, but you started at such a low for me that I'm not terribly invested.
Yeah, and neither of them are particularly likable. At least with Lily Collins, at least with Ellen, you see the gritty realism of this disease. So she, like, you empathize with her on, like, this is a person that's dealing with this, and we see all the... sorry. And we see all the... we see all, like, the repercussions of it in full force. So we can empathize with her as a statistic, but not necessarily as a person.
You know, I feel like I know people like this. You know, just like when you go to a psych ward or a treatment ward or something like that, this is a type of person you will meet there.
No, I know people like this too.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why I empathize with her, at least on that level. It's like, yeah, she's maybe not the most fleshed out character, but I thought as an actress, I thought Lily Collins performed this well.
She did do a very good job. I just, with the people that I know that are like this, there is always an underlying warmth under the aggression, and you can look past it and go, I know you're in a really fucked up place, and I know that you're hurting, but I still see the good person on the inside, and you have to dig deep for her, for Ellen, to really find it.
Yeah. I want to go back to Keanu Reeves for a second. Yeah. Like, because I'm reading the I'll always go back to Keanu Reeves. I don't care. he's just too goddamn gorgeous.
We just can't quit.
Yeah, but I want to talk about because I'm reading the IMDb plot description, and it says a young woman is dealing with anorexia. Okay.
Yep.
She meets an unconventional doctor who challenges her to face her condition and embrace life. Is he really unconventional? They even use that word in the movie.
They mention it, yeah.
But the only unconventional thing is they use a house. That's the only unconventional thing they do with the treatment.
If he swears, he swears a couple times, but there's nothing about him that's unconventional. When you tell me an unconventional doctor, I'm thinking, like, hypnotherapy, fucking, like, torture, or, like, something. He's a pretty nice doctor in terms of, like, rehab goes. It's a pretty lenient place.
Yeah.
For him being so busy and stuff like that, though, I thought it was funny how he always had time to go take him out for, like, a field trip and go hang out with them.
Yeah, there's a whole bit where he talks about how busy he is, and yet he's there, he's doing his job every day. He never is, like, not showing up, unlike some characters that are, quote-unquote, not in the movie. And then he takes him on field trips.
Like,
he's so invested in his character, he even notices and references the love relationship that's going on, which is unconventional because there's no way a doctor would let his patients date.
Well, I mean, to be fair, they are his work, so, I mean, it's like, you know, he has to be there. That's part of his job. It's not, it's not like he's just, oh, this is my time to relax. It's like, no, this is work. You know, even going to that one water art exhibit, whatever, it's like, yeah, this is not just fun. This is meant to be medically helpful or psychologically helpful.
Yes, but he's
still... That water exhibit was not meant to be fun. It was meant to be, like...
Empowering?
Whoever made this to show off and try to make preteens feel like they're deep. Because that scene was totally fucking stupid.
it was. But the thing is with Keanu Reeves, he's more of, like, a chill youth group leader than a doctor at most points. Like,
sure, I can see that, but it should have been that.
Like, he's a step away from, like, let's get some pizza and some Sprite and watch the Chronicles of Narnia.
That's like, kind of what they did about
it. I mean, yeah, that's... He's like a chill dude. Like, he doesn't seem to be that much of a medical professional until the one point where he's like, I'm a medical professional. You need to listen to me.
Yeah, but my point being is, like, he's definitely not unconventional. Not enough for it to warrant them saying it in the movie and in the plot description.
Yeah, no, he's very conventional. He's just laid back.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
He was kind of... I don't know why he would take a project like this. He's got a lot going on. He's not, like, a B-list actor, you know what I mean? Like, it seems like a movie that some B-list actor would take after they've hit their peak.
Yeah.
But he's still, like, he's got fucking John Wick. He's still, like, you know...
He was in The Neon Demon, which was great.
Right, so I don't know. It just seems kind of funny he would even bother.
I think the thing was that he was attracted to the story, and he was attracted to the person making it. Like, you know, Marty Nixon.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's like, oh, well, this person's got a high profile, and maybe I can build some indie cred if I do this movie. That's at least my idea.
And I think he definitely did. He's doing a good job in the movie. It's just, I wouldn't necessarily say the material feels beneath him. It feels like he's so clearly at the top of the call sheet on every day that he was there. And it just, there was a little bit of a disconnect between him and everyone else, it felt.
I can see that.
Yeah. But the thing is, for me, and without going into it too much in depth, I was really liking this movie. I really liked how they dealt with her overcoming this disease and trying to struggle with that, and the moments when she didn't overcome with the disease. And then the last 15 minutes of this fucking movie are some of the biggest bullshit I've ever seen. It doesn't discount how good the first hour and a half was. Because the first hour and a half is pretty good.
You're so shocked by it. I'm not going to say I saw where it was going, but what happens and where it goes is not at all shocking to me as you seem to think it is. It was so obviously heading towards something mediocre.
It's a PSA. That's a very PSA ending.
Yes, but the way it goes about it, the tropes that they use, and the motivation that is used to basically get through this obnoxious trope. Like, I knew it wasn't going to be, like, this grand revelatory thing, but I was like, at least give me a little consequence. Give me a little something that I haven't seen 1,000 times before. Did either of you guys see 47 Meters Down?
No. Is it bad?
I
really don't want it to be bad, but it seems like it's awful.
It's okay. But at the end, it pulls this same shit. And I hate this trope so much when it reverses itself. And it's just so annoying. I'm so fed up with fake scenes.
I kind of am too. Did you hate it when they did it in like 127 hours?
No,
I thought that was one of the strongest parts of that movie.
Because they made it very clear the entire time that it was, and when it was important, it wasn't. When it was important, like 127 hours, like when important things were happening, they wouldn't do a dream. They did the dream to further small pieces of his psyche and not have the, like, big emotional climactic moment be in that.
Except for the dream right before the climax in 127 hours, if you forgot that part. the part that inspired him to actually break free in that scene.
Yes, but the emotional part of that movie is him cutting the arm off. It's not the dream right before it.
It's not the climax itself. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, and that is a fair point. And it has been 7 years since I've seen 127 hours, but
127 years.
It's been 127 years. I don't know why I did that voice. I'm so sorry.
Someone's offended, but I don't know what.
Do we have any listeners over the age of like 25? I think I'm actually the oldest listener.
Just because you're the only one here under the age of 25 does not mean
I think I'm
actized from the UGO podcast listens to us every now and then. So hey, Nick.
What's up?
Nice. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I've seen... Okay, I know this isn't a reference to an addiction movie. Well, I don't know. Would you classify anorexia as an addiction?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
It's a disorder. Okay.
If you would classify addiction as a disease or a disorder, then yes.
Sure. Okay. Well, then I feel like there's so many better movies out there that's sort of along the same lines. Like, I was thinking Everything Must Go.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Which is, like, I feel like that's such a better version of addiction. In that case, it's alcoholism as opposed to addiction to anorexia or bulimia. But I feel like that's so much better. You feel it more. And I don't know, more charming. This is just kind of like... Leslie did the right thing when she said it was a what's the TV channel where women always get beat?
Lifetime.
Lifetime.
Wait, is that what you got from that? That's where women get beat?
Pretty much.
Is that a strike? I don't know.
I don't give a fuck.
That's
because,
not like half a strike.
Because really, like, that's all they ever do on that. It's like, if you ever watch Lifetime, it's either some chick getting murdered, some chick that is a murderer, or some chick getting beaten. Like, that's, I don't know why they advertise this as the channel for women. It's not very women friendly.
The channel fair for point. Abuse.
Ah, Jesus. But, like, everything must go. The alcoholism is kind of in the background of that movie. Here it is the foreground. It's like the anorexia movie to the bone. Like, it's so much more, like, the thing that I kind of compared this to was a movie called It's Kind of a Funny Story. Have any of you guys seen that? It's...
Is that the one with Zach Galifianakis?
Yes.
Yeah. See, that's another one where, like, it would have been better if they didn't tack on the romance angle.
Exactly.
Like, it would have been a really good movie about healing and depression, but they gotta change it halfway through and turn it into a rom-com.
But then, yes. Like, you watch a whole movie that's nothing but anorexia the entire time?
I wouldn't want to, but it'd be good.
Yeah, I. You know what? I'm glad you posed that question, because I absolutely 100% could watch a movie that was about that.
Yeah.
It stuck to its guns and has something to say about it. This is just kind of meanders through the topic about it. Like, we're about our anorexia. Well, what about it? We're about anorexia.
And love.
Okay.
And love.
Yeah. And love. Yeah. And Keanu Reeves. Don't forget.
Yeah.
Okay. So what? What about it, dude? Get to the point.
Like, it wanted to be a harrowing experience. And when it is a harrowing experience, the movie really works. And it also wants to be, like, this light story about healing. And when it is that, it works. But those two things together... The way it's structured, going back and forth between this horrible darkness and this light, and the thing that is the inevitable, like, end of the second act thing that makes all of this start to crumble, is it's not convincing.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it wants to be a harrowing experience, but its structure just makes it more of a narrowing experience.
Hey! That was actually pretty funny.
Oh, thank you.
I like that.
Davey. Man, you make a guy blush.
Aww.
Aww. I guess we can get into final thoughts.
Yeah.
I mean, if anyone wants to keep going, they can go on their own little tangent. But, you know, it's okay. It's at the end of the day, I kind of want to just say again that it's just harmless. Like, it's... I feel that this is a movie for somebody. And it's not for anyone that I know. And I don't even know if it's for everyone that suffers from this disease.
Yeah.
But it is for somebody, and it might give them some hope. I don't know what the hope is, because the ending sort of just peters out about its point. Like, it's supposed to be about her healing, but I can never tell you what she comes across that makes her heal.
Yeah.
And I don't know what motivates her to change. I mean, I see... it, but I don't know what... I couldn't voice what she experienced.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just dumb and I missed it, but maybe they needed to spell it out to me because I'm stupid, but I didn't get what she decided to turn in the end. That's just me.
Yeah.
But I give it 5.5 out of 10.
You might want to clean up
wow.
Jesus Christ.
I feel like it had a lot more potential than what it played out to be. Like I said, I thought I was going to be so excited about it because it was a Lifetime movie, quote unquote. But no, it wasn't to my liking, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I felt like it just could have done justice for all the other movies that were like this, but failed. But this one just failed, too. I really did love Lily Collins. She was adorable in it, even though she was, you know, a diseased gal.
I don't think she was that much. I feel like the makeup artist on this worked overtime, because she doesn't look all that skinny. I mean, don't get me wrong,
no.
She's skinny, but not...
She lost a lot of weight for this role.
Please tell me there was at least a little bit of CGI or makeup involved.
It's gotta be. Just to make her, like, her collarbones and her elbow bones deeper, they had to add some shade.
Yeah, I mean, on her face, they added a bunch of, like, contour and stuff.
Right.
Like, make her cheekbones pop out. But I really like her acting in this. I don't know. I wish we talked a little bit more about the scene with, I forget what's her name, the pregnant gal?
Leslie
Bibb?
Leslie
yeah.
Bibb, but what was her character's name? I don't remember. Anyway,
yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Megan?
Yeah. I feel like we could have, I don't know. Like, I like her.
I actually like that plot a little bit more than, that would have been way more interesting of a story.
It would have been, like, kind of following her around, because I felt like that was more of, like, a more, hey, well, don't
The stakes are higher.
Stakes are a lot higher, obviously.
Though that conclusion was pretty inevitable, too. Which, you know, not to spoil, but it, you're not surprised when you see what happen with that. So,
It still gets you. I mean, once I saw that scene, and they do a really good thing with how they film that scene, and basically put it entirely on a reaction shot of Lily Collins, and I teared up when I saw when it started to kick in.
Yeah, I think that was like a major scene, and I think because of that, I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10. 4 out of 10 gooey goo. What was that thing? That chocolate thing that they
goo goo
clusters. Goo goo clusters.
Goo clusters. Goo clusters.
Fair enough.
I hate Justin. That, according to you, this movie is twice as good as Okja.
Did you really give Okja a 2?
Oh, yeah.
And you like Okja more than this. You're so off.
Because Okja's a great movie, and this is a fine, mediocre movie.
Yeah, you gotta work on your ratings. You're good with your reviews. You're getting a lot better and more descriptive on how you rate things. But, like,
I expected a Lifetime movie. Even though I know it wasn't a quote-unquote Lifetime movie, I expected so much more from the beginning. It didn't give me what I wanted. Therefore, I'm going to rate it what I did.
Okay, I like how her expectations of it were a Lifetime movie, which is usually a derogatory term.
I love Lifetime movies. Fuck y'all.
So you like getting beaten? That's cool.
What?
No. Okay, no, that is a strike.
There's the other half of that strike, motherfucker.
Yeah, TJ, Justin, I can't wait to come down to Austin and see how you watch movies. I just want to watch you.
Well, I mean, you can come over, but I usually watch them naked.
So.
That's even worse.
He wants to cuddle you, Davey.
Thanks, TJ.
Little spoon. Justin, what's your rating?
Well, now that I've been filled with images I don't need to see. I guess I like this more than everybody else here. What you guys say is not exactly wrong. It is a Lifetime-ish movie. It is a PSA. It definitely is reaching for a very teen-focused audience, because the dialogue is very exposition-heavy. It's very talky. It's very, you know, you need to live. You need to stay alive. You need to find a reason to keep going kind of stuff. It's like TJ kind of implied, this is a movie meant for somebody. And if it does reach out to somebody, then sure, I'm totally cool with that. Objectively speaking, I thought it still did what it did well. It was well made, well edited. It had great performances all throughout it. I even liked the guy as much as I disliked the character, kind of. The guy who played Luke.
Yeah.
I mean, especially considering this is like his first movie, I think. Like this and one other film. So, I thought he was pretty good. And I think I kind of agree with Davey with the ending, only in that it felt like there should have been one more scene. Like, if they had one more scene of showing, an epilogue bit or some kind of, actual resolution, but for them to cut off where they did, it was kind of an awkward, you can figure out what happens after this. We don't need to tell you. It's like, but you told us everything else about this story. So.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, because the way it was about to end, my mind timed it as in I have a couple seconds because it seems like there's going to be a transition period. So I went down to grab a thing to drink, and by the time I looked back at the screen, credits were rolling. I was like, oh, whoops, I guess I mistimed that.
Yeah.
But I see what you're saying. So what was your rating? I'm sorry.
I was just about to get to it. So with all that said, I still liked it enough where I'm going to give it 7... I'm forgetting the same rating. I'm going to give it 7.5 out of 10 My Little Pony Patients.
I did really like this movie. Well, not really, but I was into this movie up until that end, and that end just left a horribly sour taste in my mouth. It is for a teenage audience, and I do want to commend the movie for basically trying to do the same thing that 13 Reasons Why did, but doing it properly. A little bit of backstory about me. When I was younger, I wanted to impress a girl, so I got a Tumblr, because she was like, you gotta try this website, it's great, and I was like, I like you, so I'm gonna get on this website. I was on Tumblr daily for 3 years. And I had messages and, contacted, a lot of people who dealt with very similar issues, and I know that this movie is going to be for them, because this is a movie about getting through this, and about healing, and it doesn't fetishize it in a weird way, like something like 13 Reasons Why did, and I really respect it for that. the acting is good. And the writing, for the most part, while it is pedantic, it's worthwhile. But I just can't get on board with how it wraps up and it as a story. And it kind of dampens a lot of the positive qualities that I had going into this film. Certain parts of it work, but it doesn't all work together as a holistic experience. So I'm going to give this 6 out of 10 times that I prayed that Keanu Reeves was going to say, anorexia is not excellent.
Well, points for using pedantic in a phrase.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, man.
You have to be pedantic to use pedantic, I'm just saying, though.
69, you know me. Dudes.
If you us is we us, then what is our favorite number?
69. Yeah, I did also kind of expect for Zoolander to come up just like, you can read minds.
So, okay, Davey, you have to lead the spoilers real quick, because I'm just genuinely curious what you're so mad about the ending about.
Okay, so we're going to spoil it to the bone a little bit. So, in the end of the movie, she runs away from this house because people pissed her off because Luke was a little bit of a tool. I don't fucking know. And she goes to Phoenix, Arizona. When she's in the Greyhound waiting place, she passes out and still goes on the Greyhound bus. Like, she's so close to being dead.
Yeah.
And she goes to Phoenix to live with her mom and her mom's wife. And she one day, like, the first day she's there, she just goes out into the desert and starts walking. She passes out, and she wakes up to see Luke standing over her. And at first, I was thinking, oh, God, like, they all came and had this big reunion, yada, yada, yada. It's so much fucking worse. Because he pulls her up, and they walk over to this tree, and on the tree is another version of her, and then they're up in the tree, sitting, and they make out a little bit, and they look down, and there's a naked Lily Collins looking like the baby Voldemort from the last Harry Potter movie. And she's like, is that me? And he's like, yes, that's you. And it's basically just a bunch of bullshit about, like, you can get better, but if you don't, you'll turn into this. Ooh. And then she wakes up from the desert because it was all a dream sequence, and she's like, I know what I gotta do now. And cut, and over the next 20 seconds of movie,
she the goes last back 20 to seconds LA. Of the movie.
Huh?
The last 20 seconds of the yes. movie.
The last 20 seconds of the movie. She's back in LA, she hugs her stepmom, and her stepmom's like, oh, she loves me again. Or finally, I guess. Finally, and then she yeah. goes back to the house, and she walks up, and she has this big smile. She's like, I'm gonna be okay.
And credits.
I hate when a movie ends. Okay, because going back to 47 Meters Down, there's a 30-minute sequence in 47 Meters Down that is really good, really tense, really thrilling. And then it's revealed that that whole 30-minute sequence was a dream. And that the ending is way more harrowing. Which is fine. That's just fucking fine. But I've seen it so many times, and I hate it when movies do that. When they make you think, even for half a second, that something real is happening. And then it's not. And I just... It bothered me so much, and it made me so angry, that it really just took a giant shit on this movie. For me.
Yeah, it is. It kind of just ends in a way where it's like, I didn't know what its point was. I don't know what made her suddenly decide, like, she almost died, but she almost died, like, 3 times before, so, but.
It anyway. Was meant to be metaphoric, and I almost just picture, though, when her and Luke are sitting on that tree, it's like, oh yeah, if you look over the other branch, it's Forrest Gump and Jenny over there. So.
That would have been something interesting.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's like, Mom always said you need to eat more chocolate, that way you don't get to go to the hospital.
Hospital wars.
So that's all we need to say about To the Bone.
Man. Fair enough. Well, thank you all for joining us. Justin, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me here at oneofus.net. I write the notes for the Breakfast Pub. It's a great little news podcast for subscribers, only $2 a month, and you can hear Chris Cox, Chris Herman and a rotating bunch of guests who all comment on the news in their funny trademark, you know, jokey fashion.
Yeah,
you can also find me occasionally on We're Error. You know, I step in for a few reviews, especially for Telltale Games.
Yep.
And then you can find me on Unapologetic Geek Out with Nick Ties and Travis. And we have a series called Netflix and Kill, where we watch through movies on Netflix that have a significant moment of violence, any genre, and we just review it. So, yeah, we have, I think, 5-6 episodes up now. So, yeah, feel free to check out our back catalog.
Very cool, very cool. Leslie?
You can find me on Instagram. Look so pretty. LOOKSOPRETTY.
Cool, cool. You can find me on Facebook, Mr.Hooker711. And at Twitter, TJ calls bullshit Davey.
You can find me on Twitter at Davey Peppers, and you can find me on Instagram at TheDaveyPeppers. And as always, you can find more of the things that I have done on oneofus.net.
And the things that I have done.
And the things that I have done.
And me.
We're all... I'm Spartacus.
Wow. And also, just to toot our own horn, I have to also compliment Davey and Thomas on their video editing work that they do on the site here with me. So, aw,
thanks. You too.
That made me a little hard. Not because you know, complimented my work, but because you called me Thomas, and only people that make me hard get to call me Thomas.
I am never going to call you Thomas again.
Aw, boner killed.
I was too busy being happy about the compliment.
We will be back next week, or sort of in a couple days after that. We will be reviewing a Netflix original known as The Incredible Jessica James, which comes out July 28th. Our episode will be out before that because we actually get some screeners, so woohoo to that. Because
we're cool.
Yep. Other than that, we will be back soon, and thank you all for joining us. Bye.
Bye. Awesome.
Thank you.
Goodbye. Later.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.